What's going on, everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, if you look at the title, that will go and explain everything for you about what this is all about. But specifically, however, what the title doesn't say about it is that it will be discussing about the latest news that happened this week. So on today's episode, what I'm going to be discussing about is a Cartoon Brew interview with Ralph Bakshi regarding the 25th anniversary of Cool World. Then afterwards, we will be looking at the all-new trailer of Animal Crackers. Then we will be discussing about the latest edition in the Walt Disney Signature Collection. Then afterwards, we will be looking way deeper into this ultimate battle of Steve Whitmire, the former performer of Kermit the Frog versus Disney. And then finally, we got Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is go onto Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also go and email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, for our first story right over here, we're going to be talking about the 25th anniversary of a certain animated feature. Now, when it comes to 2017, there's a lot of things that are going to be turning 25 years old in the animation industry. And there's a lot of different projects and all that kind of stuff. First and foremost, it's going to be the 25th anniversary of Disney's Aladdin. There's also going to be the 25th anniversary of Ferngully, The Last Rainforest. On television, this is going to be the 25th anniversary of Cartoon Network, the entire channel itself. And then, most importantly, it's going to be the 25th anniversary of me. Coming soon, I'm actually going to be turning 25 years old. But what I'm going to be talking about in this case is actually a rather interesting animated feature. One that not many people would look at something and would say that it is good. And what I am talking about, it is the 25th anniversary of Ralph Bakshi's Cool World. A movie that is said to be so over the top, so crazy, and so bad that it pretty much traumatized Ralph Bakshi from not making any more animated features since. This is actually his final animated feature that he would go and create. Not his final project ever. Like, he didn't just die afterwards, or he didn't touch animation anymore. He just didn't want to go back into making animated feature films. And to go and celebrate this rather unusual but special occasion, Cartoon Brew decided to go and contact Ralph Bakshi and discuss a little bit about his experience in making Cool World. Now, before that we would continue, considering that this is Cartoon Brew, I just want to go and start off by saying congratulations to the co-founder of Cartoon Brew, Amid Amidi, to actually get his Ward Kimball book finally got to get published, and we'll have a release date soon. I know that in the Animation Podcast, I have been pretty tough on the guy, and I would call him crazy old Amid, especially the fact that he is quite a controversial animation figure, but I knew that this was a project that he was working on for a very long time, and it actually is really awesome that he would finally get his book to be finally published, and we'll see the light of day. And this is a guy that definitely knows his stuff, so I'm sure that he would bring out a really fascinating book with it. So once again, congratulations, Amid. But going back to this little interview here, this is not actually conducted by Amid Amidi. This was actually done by Scott Phil. And when he would discuss with Ralph Bakshi about Cool World, because once upon a time, there was a moment when Ralph would not talk about it at all. Like, he would refuse to say anything about Cool World. He had like a passionate hate for it and would try to avoid anything related to it as much as possible. But nowadays, he seems to be a lot more comfortable with it. And he would pretty much discuss that if there is one thing that he really is proud of, is the animation. Because here's the whole thing with Cool World. This was actually Ralph Bakshi's first and only time that he would do a feature film for a big name studio, which in this case is Paramount Pictures. And one thing that he absolutely despised and couldn't even handle is pretty much taking orders and taking notes, where he doesn't feel like he's fully in control with his movie. And you might have heard about the crazy backstory of what happened with Cool World, how it was an entirely different movie once upon a time, but then it came out as this little mess, as what many people would refer to as a knockoff to Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So that was one big thing that he was not proud of, is the fact that a lot of the writers, or not the writers, but I mean the executives, would have control over the story. They would have control over the writing. They would have control over the casting. Like, he's not really fond of the idea of bringing in people like Brad Pitt and Kim Basinger onto their cast. And the live action bits as well. What they could control, that's one thing that Ralph Bakshi was not very proud of. And that's why also it would explain how it came out as a rather poor product to this day. But if there is one thing that he really is happy about, is actually the animation, because that's one aspect that the executives couldn't really have control. Ralph Bakshi actually stated that since this was a field that executives were not necessarily familiar with, that's how animators were capable of getting away with a lot of stuff, a lot of creative freedom. And I know a lot of people could criticize the animation that there's so many random weird stuff, but even I have to admit, what was done in there, it was actually quite an interestingly phenomenal well job. Like, there are some aspects of the animation that's really admirable and some of the best in its own department. Like, the backgrounds are beautiful. They are some of the best that you could find for an animated project. Seriously, look it up. It's so beautiful. In fact, let me just read you a little quote here coming from my source on Cartoon Brew, and I'll do it even with a Ralph Bakshi impression. Okay.
Well, I mean, on the live action end, the animation, on the animation end, I had a lot of fun with the guys. The cell animation was some of the best we've ever done. It was very slick stuff. A brilliant job by young animators, many of which went on to do great work at Pixar, DreamWorks, and others, including Tom McGrath, who directed The Boss Baby, which co-stars my grandson, Miles Bakshi. I'm very proud of that. So on that level, I feel very good about Cool World, because I hired a lot of young guys out of CalArts. The animation was good, the guys were good, but the story and casting were more due to Paramount. And I never really got over the shock of being told what to do. But that's my fault, because that's how studios work. I've been very lucky with the freedom I've had in the business.
Oh, fudge nabbit. That is a stab to the throat. Seriously, doing a Ralph Bakshi impression, that was painful. Like, it was fun to do, but my god, it was torture for the throat. But yeah, that's pretty much a really good summary of what basically happened with Cool World. He's very happy with the animation, but not necessarily too fond with the decisions done by Paramount. But it's not just about Cool World that Ralph Bakshi would go and discuss. He would also go on to talk about a lot of the other aspects, basically his legacy that he left in the animation industry. Like, first and foremost, he pretty much confirmed that he doesn't want to do another animated feature. So another Ralph Bakshi movie is completely thrown out the window. But if there is one thing that Ralph Bakshi would love to do, is to go and get back into animation in general, or at least be in an environment with animators to go and talk with, to just talk about animation. And one thing that he did miss is that many of the people he used to go and hang out with, people who were once the masters of their own domain, unfortunately, they have passed away. And it is true. He even did state that he is kind of like his own man. He even stated,
"But I do have some ideas to pass on to the studios. I miss hanging around with animators. It's rare for me to talk to anyone in the animation business because everyone I knew there had died. I'm the last man standing."
And he would also talk about his previous movies finding new audiences, where people like millennials and people before it, like teenagers and all those kinds of young crowds, would go and see his movies for the first time, rather it be some of his more like ghetto-like feature films or like movies that would be set in the ghetto and would have a major commentary towards them, rather it be like Fritz the Cat, Heavy Traffic, or Coonskin, or even some of his fantasy films that heavily uses rotoscoping, like Lord of the Rings or Fire and Ice. And he definitely feels rather appreciative that he's getting a pretty large name for himself even years afterwards, or decades after those movies were made. And it really does, like, made him realize that he really did leave a massive impact, that generations to come are going to be enjoying his movies, that he literally placed his mark onto animation. Okay, well, maybe not literally, but he legitimately made a big impact in animation. And it really is quite a fascinating article to read. And I, like, after this entire podcast, I highly recommend you guys to go to Cartoon Brew and check out this interview with Ralph Bakshi done by Scott Phil. It was actually really fascinating to look into. And one thing that I really do feel appreciative is the fact that someone like Ralph Bakshi can set aside a grudge for a movie that he had and just go and discuss about it and be okay with it. Because 10 years ago, there would be no way that you can even have Ralph Bakshi mention Cool World, because, like, as you have seen, he had such a distaste for it. He had such a passionate hate and had such a hard time with the top executives at Paramount that he doesn't even want to do anything with it. But now, 25 years later, he feels much more comfortable about it. He's completely cool and just, you know, reminisce even some of the good times that actually happen when making something like Cool World. Another good example of something like this that happened in animation is with Richard Williams. If you guys recall, after the release of The Thief and the Cobbler, like, he did not want to talk about it whatsoever. He actually really hates it. He hated the treatment that he gotten from Miramax, pretty much saying that for around 30 years, he pretty much wasted his time making what people would perceive as an Aladdin ripoff. But nowadays, Richard Williams is actually a lot more comfortable talking about it, discussing about some of the work that he has done for The Thief as an example of animation. And even the Academy would help him out by presenting some screenings of his unfinished original vision of what The Thief and the Cobbler would be, and even preserving some of his old artwork, and it really is nice. And I just want to go and mention this right now. Not only should you guys go and read this interview on Cartoon Brew, but there's actually something related to Cool World that I highly recommend you guys go and watch, and that is the Nostalgia Critic episode of Cool World. And speaking as someone who has been a Nostalgia Critic fan for a long, long time, I gotta say, that Cool World episode was actually one of his best in recent years. It really is that good. Even if you're not someone who watches the Nostalgia Critic, I highly recommend you go check it out. And it really is insightful and hilarious the way that they would go and depict Ralph Bakshi. It really is a lot of fun. But yeah, that's pretty much all the interview that we have with the Ralph Bakshi Cool World story. And like I said, it really is fascinating and really nice to see Ralph Bakshi looking back into the project now with some form of happiness with the legacy that not only his movies left, but even with how Cool World left, that he would even look back and see how his animators that worked in there would grow and do some bigger projects, including The Boss Baby. So yeah, this was definitely an interesting read to get into. Now, our next story that we have right over here is going to be a brand new trailer for an animated film that I have heard for a while. Something that was in production for a long time, for many years. Like, throughout this entire decade, I've heard stories about it. I've heard how some people were talking about it. And they finally managed to complete the project. The only thing they have to do now is try to find a distributor in order to give it a proper release date. And what I am talking about right now is a movie called Animal Crackers. And if I may go and read a little excerpt here of what this is about, coming from, once again, Cartoon Brew, directed by Tony Bancroft, as you guys may know, is a Disney animator, and also one of the directors of Mulan, and Scott Christian Sava. Animal Crackers is based on the graphic novel by Sava, who also co-wrote the screenplay with Dean Laurie. The high concept idea tells the story of a family that inherits a circus, which comes with a box of magical animal crackers. Whoever eats one of the crackers will be transformed into the animal they're eating. And that's basically the whole concept. And what we see in the trailer, what it's trying to tell us, is that this family apparently has this ordinary mundane life. And the father of the family, played by John Krasinski, isn't really too happy with his job testing out dog treats, where he literally has to taste all different sorts of dog treats in this factory. So he and his wife decided to turn things around in their life and decided to go and buy a circus. And apparently this circus has something magical in there, which is a box of animal crackers. And in the box of animal crackers, like, if you eat one, you turn into the animal they, the cracker would go and depict. And apparently, that's the strategy of making a successful circus show. It's for the one person to eat that animal cracker and to transform into animals while performing in that circus. And that's basically the whole gist of what this trailer is presenting. And if I could be honest, just discussing about this movie in general, one thing that I really do admire is actually the concept. And I think it's in that area where this movie would have the strongest potential, because this really is a unique and creative idea, where if you would tell anyone that there is a movie based on animal crackers, they would kind of have a bit of an emoji movie response, thinking that Hollywood has gone so low to the point that they have to really dig the bottom of the barrel to find ideas. So they would go and find like Kid Snacks as an idea. Like, after this, they would go and make the Doritos movie, or they would go and make the Mountain Dew movie. Those two movies, apparently they're going to go and have a crossover, and it will be the number one feature film for gamers. Okay, but anyways, going back to Animal Crackers, the concept alone, I feel like it really is well thought out. Like, Sana did a phenomenal job thinking about this idea and giving out this concept that could really have so much possibilities, where, like, you have this box of magical animal crackers and you turn into the animal of whatever you would eat. In fact, this is kind of the literal term of you are what you eat. And then suddenly just find out different ideas and all the potential things that you can do with it. Something that could end up going action-packed, something that could be funny. And, you know, and it's also, in a way, in an animation sense, it is very reminiscent of many of the past Disney films, including one example is The Emperor's New Groove, when Yzma would send the guards to go and chase Kuzco and Krunk, and then suddenly Pacha brings in a whole bunch of bottles, hopefully knowing that one of them would turn Kuzco into a human. And then suddenly we see throughout this entire chase that Kuzco would turn into numerous of different animals. Or a better and greater example is actually in the Sword of the Stone with the Wizard's Duel, where Merlin and Madman and Mim would turn into different animals in order to compete against each other. So that's kind of the basis of the idea in an animation sense of what you could do with this idea of animal crackers. So it definitely has a lot of fun plans, and especially the fact that with one of my examples mentioning Emperor's New Groove, you actually do have one of the animators as the director. Tony Bancroft actually was the animator of Kronk in the movie, so it perfectly makes sense for it. But also, another thing that I will say is actually quite impressive is actually the cast. Now, I know that sometimes an all-star cast doesn't signal that this is going to be a fantastic movie. Like, I have seen plenty of films that would feature a lot of recognizable names and they would turn out terrible. Like, a good example I can think of is with The Nut Job. But in here, it does have a bit of a promising cast. Again, this is another aspect that would show some promise. Or actually, going back into how it wouldn't work, like, a good example would be the Ratchet & Clank movie, where they would feature people like Sylvester Stallone or John Goodman. Great actors, not so great in this movie. But, okay, I'm sorry I interrupted myself. Going back into the cast of Animal Crackers, they would feature the voice of John Krasinski, like I said before, Emily Blunt, Danny DeVito, Sir Ian McKellen, Sylvester Stallone, Patrick Warburton, well, again, because Tony Bancroft brought him in, Raven Simone, Harvey Feinstein, Wallace Shawn, Gilbert Gottfried, Tara Strong, and James Arnold Taylor, and so much more. Like, this is definitely a list of recognizable actors that you could tell that they would have enough trust to go and work on this project. So that's a pretty good sign. However, if I may mention about one thing that I am not sure about this movie entirely, or what this trailer is presenting me, it's in terms of the execution. Now, maybe this is more the case of the trailer right over here, and the more that I think about it, the more that, yeah, that could be the reason. It's just because the trailer is just showing us something that feels like it's going to be like most any other animated feature film. Like, the trailer is pretty much showing us this heartfelt comedy about a family getting together with magic and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty much presenting us what we have seen in so many different animated features. But that is all in the execution of that trailer. Maybe the movie itself would present, would pretty much go and present itself in a way that would be a little bit different than what the trailer is saying what this movie is going to be. But that one, I am not 100% sure. I feel like the execution might not be a selling point to this film. And also, I gotta mention this because I'm sure some people will. It would actually be regarding the animation, but I'm not gonna hold this too accountable for it. And the reason is because you could tell that this is definitely an independent animated feature. It doesn't have a huge budget compared to something like Disney or DreamWorks or Illumination would make. It doesn't have like the hundreds of millions or even like the $80 million budgets. Like, this movie would pretty much go and feature some animation that's not the best, really. Like, this is computer animation that's more in line with the quality that you could probably expect from a TV show. Like, something out of an animated series from DreamWorks Animation, which is still kind of good, but not the top quality that you would find in feature films. But again, I'm not gonna hold this movie accountable for it because, again, it's independent, so it can kind of get away with it as long as it's able to tell a strong story. So that's basically the whole thing with Animal Crackers. I can feel like it could have a strong story, but execution-wise, will they take advantage of it? And that I don't really know, but I could definitely tell from what it's showing us, it could have some promise. In fact, I just want to say right now, if there's anybody who went to the Annecy Animation Film Festival this year, tell us if you have actually seen the movie itself, because I know that movie actually did premiere at that festival in Annecy. So if you have seen it, let us know what you think just by writing down a little comment regarding if the movie is actually worth it, if it's better than what the trailer is actually showing us. Now, in terms of release date, we don't know when is it going to be released. Again, Animal Crackers is still trying to go and find a distributor for it. But who knows? Maybe we'll get it in 2018 or 2019, but we'll just have to wait and see with Animal Crackers. Now, our next story that we have right over here, we're going to be going back into the D23 Expo a little bit, because this story actually has a little bit of a connection with that. Now, you see, at the end of the D23 Expo, that's when they would go and present some of their smaller panels. Or, in this case, like, they would be huge if they were in any other convention, but in the case of the D23 Expo, especially when they would have stuff like the Animation Expo, or the Animation Panel, the Theme Parks Panel, the Live Action Panel, and that one panel that featured the Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer, they basically were smaller size panels. Like, they were kind of the small stuff, talking about some of the individual movies, and especially some of their anniversaries. Like, this year we have the 25th anniversary, or no, not the 25th anniversary, sorry, the 75th anniversary of Bambi. Then they would also do the 20th anniversary of Hercules. And then they would have a special panel of The Lion King. And in there, it was actually hosted by some of the cast and crew of the animated feature. And they would just go and just talk about the making of The Lion King and the impact that it had in our modern society. And in there, they would feature people like director Rob Minkoff, producer Don Hahn, animators like Mark Han, and coincidentally enough, Tony Bancroft actually came back, since he was also the supervising animator of Pumbaa. So there is that right there. And then there's also some of the voices, including Jim Cummings, Ernie Sabella, and of course, Whoopi Goldberg, since she's one of the people that ultimately became a Disney legend. However, right at the end, like right after they did a little grand finale with people singing Circle of Life, or one of the songs from The Lion King, they actually released a trailer revealing that The Lion King is actually going to be the next animated film that will be re-released on Blu-ray and DVD as part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection. Now, surprisingly enough, immediately afterwards, Blu-ray.com contained all the info of what's going to be going on with this Blu-ray in particular. So let me just read the studio synopsis that they were given. Audiences will fall in love all over again with a treasured classic, and a new generation of fans will laugh with Timon and Pumbaa, cry with Simba and Mufasa, burst into song, and find their place in the circle of life. The Walt Disney Signature Collection releases... The Walt Disney Signature Collection release includes over 3 hours of classic bonus material and exclusive brand new features, inviting viewers to sing along with the film's award-winning music, observe recording sessions, step inside the story room, witness the evolution of a villain, and join Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick for an extended conversation regarding the legacy of The Lion King. Now, it also went on to discuss that this is going to be the 5th Disney film that's going to be a part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection, following the footsteps of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Beauty and the Beast, Pinocchio, and Bambi. Now, on top of that, they even went on to go and bring out all the specifics of what's going to be inside this movie. These include a brand new sing-along version. There's also going to be an audio commentary with Don Hahn and directors Roger Allers and Rob Minkoff. There's also something called Visualizing a Villain. Against the backdrop of live dancers and the animated Be Prepared sequence, artist David Garibaldi paints a masterpiece of evil. I remember there was at one point I actually seen David Garibaldi doing a painting performance, and it's actually really, really cool. So he's going to do a special presentation of Scar. And then there's also going to be something called the recording sessions, where you're going to look into some rare footage of the actors recording their lines for the movie. Then afterwards, you got something called Nathan and Matthew, the extended Lion King conversation, where Nathan Lane, the voice of Timon, and Matthew Broderick, the voice of adult Simba, would talk about their experience with the Lion King. Next up, they also got something called Inside the Story Room, where co-directors Roger Allers and Rob Minkoff presented archival footage of five original story pitches. And these include The Circle of Life, which is pretty much the opening of the movie. There's Simba and Nala, where it says, see how elements proposed in the story meaning evolve into what appeared on screen. And then there's also showing some of the fun stuff, like Simba takes Nala out to play. And then there's also Hakuna Matata, where you see in the pitch where they would sing some of the songs. And then also they would talk about the scene where Rafiki and Simba would be in the reflecting pool. And then afterwards, once again, this is another sing-along bit, but this is to separate all the songs separately. Like, if you don't want to watch the movie and sing the songs at the same time and you just want to sing, then there's a special little sing-along segment where you can just sing The Circle of Life. You could just sing I Just Can't Wait to Be King. You can just sing Be Prepared. You can just sing Hakuna Matata. And you could just sing Can You Feel the Love Tonight? And then afterwards, they also have an entire gallery. So you could pretty much see numerous of different drawings and artworks done for the visual development, for character design, for storyboards, for layout, and backgrounds and layouts. And then finally, they have the classic bonus features, which pretty much stated right over here. These offerings from prior home entertainment releases includes hours, which they said over 3 hours, of bonus material, such as bloopers, audio commentary, deleted and alternate scenes, and in-depth journey into the music, film, story, animals, and stage show. And that's all that they would offer. Oh, but on top of that, there is also a bonus little thing that they have. Similar what they did with Bambi, where you would actually get a little lithograph of an artwork done by Tyrus Wong, you would actually go and actually keep a little film reel from The Lion King. Now, this actually does sound pretty interesting and all that stuff, but let me tell you guys, there is actually one big thing that really turns me off. And these are two words that kind of broke the deal for me. For the classic bonus features, they are digital only. Oh boy, Disney. Can we just talk for a moment? You guys were just doing so well this year. I mean, especially with the release of Pinocchio and Bambi, where you finally got it right, where you finally took all the previous bonus features from both the Diamond and the Platinum Edition, and you would put it onto that, like you were doing so well, like you finally had it right, and it gave me hope for the Signature Collection. But no, you had to screw it up. You had to take it and just completely annihilated by going back to what you were doing with Beauty and the Beast, which that one is not bad, but compared to the Diamond Edition, it really did feel like a downgrade. Now, I'm not saying that the stuff that we have right over here isn't bad. A lot of them do seem rather interesting, but come on, man. This was one thing that we were hoping for. Like, the Diamond Edition of The Lion King wasn't really all that much. Like, it did actually feel like a bit of a downgrade compared to the Platinum Edition. And I mean, from there, it just felt like we had to sacrifice a lot of bonus features or a lot of quality bonus features just so we can have an HD version of The Lion King. And the same goes with this one, unfortunately. It's just that, why do we really have to go and just do things digitally? It makes no sense, really, guys. Especially the fact that, like, honestly, if I have to criticize some of these bonus features, a lot of them do feel like filler. Like, the sing-along stuff, and, maybe not the galleries, but also, like, the painting sequence from David Garibaldi, like, sure, like, as cool as it sounds, it's not really that much substance as a bonus feature. Like, you just have a whole bunch of small things, while your classic bonus features, like the ones that people really want to see, they're only digital. And considering that you do mention that it's over three hours, it does sound like you're bringing all the stuff from the Diamond Edition and the Platinum Edition onto that. And that's what I really want to see, man. Just take those things and put it onto the disc. Is it really that freaking hard to do? Like, even if the old Platinum Edition stuff, like, put it Standard Edition. But is it really that hard to put it on the freaking disc? At least release a 2-disc special or something like that. Seriously. You know, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed that the Signature Collection is going back to its old freaking ways. Now, I'm not saying that this is all, like, that the Lion King Signature Collection sucks. And that's not what I'm saying. Keep in mind, this is all coming from the point of view of a Blu-ray collector that wants to see Disney elevate what they've already done from last time. Now, I just want to say right now, if you guys have not owned The Lion King on either Blu-ray or DVD, this is the perfect time to do so. Disney is giving you the perfect opportunity to actually do that. In fact, if you're listening to this, then you better actually do own The Lion King either on Blu-ray or DVD. So if you own that, then there's nothing wrong with it. Like, that's actually great. You actually do have The Lion Kings that you can go and watch over and over again. But in this case right over here, if you're considering to find something to get an upgrade for either your Diamond Edition or your Platinum Edition, this is not really something that would be really convincing. So yeah, if you guys are excited, however, for The Lion King, or you're interested to see this re-release on Blu-ray and DVD, then all you have to do is wait until August 29th for the release. And yeah, I know, that's actually surprisingly early for a Signature Collection release. Like, it just felt like it hasn't been too long ago. Like, it's been less than 2 months since we've had the Signature Collection of Bambi. So, rather surprising, but yeah, it's on August 29th that you can get The Lion King Walt Disney Signature Collection, or as it likes to call itself, the Circle of Life Edition. Now, our next story that we have right over here, this is going to be a little bit of a continuation from last week's Animats Pick of the Week. And I'm not referring to the D23 episode where I talked about the Kingdom Hearts trailer. This is from the regular episode of the Animation Podcast where I talked about the big news that Steve Whitmire was fired from the Muppet Studios. And the big significance of that is that Steve Whitmire was the performer of Kermit the Frog ever since Jim Henson passed away in 1990. So there was that big commotion going on, and apparently this story is continuously progressing so far. Like, honestly, on one hand, it definitely does feel great that the Muppets are back in the news again, but not like this. This is a monkey's paw wish. Like, honestly, people are talking about the Muppets again, but not for something that's as crazy and controversial like this. And what it has gathered up to right now is a big battle between Steve Whitmire versus Disney. So here's the thing that's going on right now. And there's actually an article on the New York Times that actually perfectly summarize what is currently going on with this big battle. Apparently, what's going on is that there are two different sides of the story explaining why is it that Steve Whitmire got fired. Now, let's first look into Steve Whitmire's side of the story. Now, what he's saying is that the reason why he got fired is because there are some things that Disney feels like just Steve Whitmire is just being a bit of a pushover and won't let them do what they want to do with the Muppets in order to go and make a profit. Now, apparently there are two instances that he said might be the deal that Disney decided they don't want to work with Steve Whitmire anymore. One actually happened during the 2015 Muppet series, where Steve Whitmire would go and send notes to the top creative executives on pretty much explaining how to make the Muppets, you know, really capture the same spirit, not to do any sort of random dumb sitcom and actually do make this feel like an actual Muppet show. So that's one of the big things, is that Steve Whitmire would interfere with Disney's creative process in order to create the Muppet series. And then there is another one, which I'm going to read from my source on the New York Times, saying the second reason he said had to do with a small video shoot involving Kermit, Fozzie Bear, Miss Piggy, and an outside company, which Mr. Whitmire declined to name, that took place more than a year before the phone call. There was a contract dispute between the Screen Actors Guild, of which Mr. Whitmire is a member, and Disney over how much the performers behind the Muppets should be paid. Eventually, the union advised Mr. Whitmire not to do the project, which Mr. Whitmire agreed. After the phone call with the Muppet Studio executives, Mr. Whitmire said that he had a lawyer approach Disney executives afterwards to propose adding a provision to future contracts saying he would never give creative feedback again or to talk to the union again while a deal was being negotiated. Disney declined to offer, Mr. Whitmire said, and he soon found himself separated from his life's work. So that's Steve Whitmire's side of the story, is that apparently he's pretty much this wall between Disney and whatever they want to do with the Muppets. So that's kind of his big reason, is that, you know, he's saying that he has a good heart and he's doing it for the best of Jim Henson and the Muppets legacy, to have the Muppets stay true to what they are and not let Disney do whatever they want with them in order to go and make a quick buck just to profit off of the Muppets. So that's Steve Whitmire's side of the story. But then you would also have Disney's side of the story, which they're saying an entirely different case, that apparently, whoo boy, Mr. Whitmire is aggressive as all hell. The thing with Steven Whitmire is that he is demanding, he is abusive even, and would attack anybody that would not go on his way specifically. Like, if things aren't going in the style that Steve Whitmire is happy with, then he would throw an absolute fit, like almost a Donald Trump style fit. And one person, and two people actually, that would testify to Disney's case are actually two big figures right over here. Brian Henson and Lisa Henson, the children of Jim Henson. They actually testified by saying that Steve Whitmire would be so aggressive when it comes to playing Kermit the Frog that he would refuse to do any of the small gigs like ribbon cutting or just appearing in small events and all that kind of stuff. And also, he would refuse to let anybody else play Kermit the Frog. It is only him that should be Kermit, and that's it. And especially, it really did show that would be the case, considering that Steve Whitmire is the only guy who played Kermit ever since Jim Henson passed away. So that's basically the whole situation that we're in. We got Steve Whitmire's word saying that Disney feels like he's just in the way to go and make a quick profit off of the Muppets, and he's just doing it to keep the legacy true to what Jim Henson originally visioned for the Muppets. While Disney and the Henson family, on the other hand, are saying that Steve Whitmire is just being way too aggressive and they should have fired him a long, long time ago. So we don't know really who to believe in this case right over here. It's one word versus another. But I feel like in this situation right over here, there is only one group of people that can really prove this case. The one that can really tell who is speaking the truth more here. Is it Steve Whitmire or is it Disney and the Henson family? And that would be the other Muppeteers, the other people who would go and perform the Muppets. Like, if they could, if there's somebody, like an independent journalist that can go out there and talk to one of the Muppeteers who had worked with Steve Whitmire throughout the years, rather it be with the recent Muppet movies, like the 2011 Muppets and Muppets Most Wanted, like if you can go and ask Jason Statham, or if you could go and ask someone who has seen him since the very beginning in his career, like if you would go and ask Dave Gowels, like, or at least someone who worked with the Muppets, just always side by side with Steve Whitmire, telling us how he is, like when he would work with the Muppets, how was he like when Jim Henson was alive, and then we see the transition when he has to take on the role of Kermit, how he is as Kermit the Frog. Is it true that Steve Whitmire is actually a nice guy and he's just doing what's for the best for the Muppets? Or is he really that aggressive tyrant that Disney is portraying him to be? Like, who's telling the truth here? And I do believe those Muppeteers are actually the key to this entire answer. If we can get more perspectives from different people here, then maybe we can solve this entire case. Because for now, we got two entirely different stories, and we gotta know who's really speaking the truth. Is it Disney for profit, or is it Steve Whitmire going crazy as Kermit? We just gotta know. But that's honestly my thoughts on it. Who knows what this is going to go. I know that this is going to be a continuing story, so let's just see how it goes in this big battle. But honestly, let's hope at the end of the day that this is going to be, for the best for Kermit the Frog. And so finally, we shall end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And this week, well, as I am recording this, I just gotta say right now that in a few days from now, the animation nightmare will be upon us. And I am talking, of course, about the Emoji Movie. And oh god, I have been dreading this for a long, long time, ever since that Sony announced that they would officially be making this. And the more news I keep hearing about it, the more that it confirms to me that this will be an absolute disaster. What Norm of the North was for last year, the Emoji Movie will be for this year. And just by looking at the trailers and the images and all that kind of stuff, it makes me weep for my soul that I would have to go through this abomination of animation. Oh, good God. But the reason why I want to talk about the Emoji Movie this week is mainly because I want to go and have a little discussion regarding a certain comment that people make regarding the Emoji Movie. So if I would go and ask you guys, what is the most common comment that you would find whenever the subject of the Emoji Movie would be brought up? Now, of course, there are a variety of answers that people would say. They would mention that this movie is cancer. They would express anger over Sony and say stuff like, screw you, Sony. They would say things like, this movie shouldn't exist, but somehow it does exist. They would say that Hollywood is running out of ideas. They would say that this is a ripoff of Wreck-It Ralph and Inside Out. And then you would also have those people acting like homeless, crazy conspiracy theorists by saying, "Come on, guys, you gotta give it a chance. The trailer doesn't look that bad. Maybe the Emoji movie is gonna be joining Benjamin. You know, and all that kind of stupid stuff. But the one comment that I would like to discuss with you guys about is the one that people would say that Sony canceled Popeye for the Emoji movie. Now, I'm sure that whenever you would look into the comments section of anything related to the Emoji movie, whether it be just an image or a trailer, you're always going to find someone saying that. Like, you're always going to find someone saying that, "Really? Sony canceled Popeye for this? What the hell, man?" You know, they would go and bring up Popeye pretty much as this crutch, insinuating that Sony intentionally canceled their Popeye project for the purpose of making room in order to have an Emoji movie be made. Now, of course, there are many people out there who would blindly agree to it just to add fuel to the fire for their hatred towards an idea that has such a really stupid concept as a movie dedicated to emojis. But I wonder if there are actually some people out there who would actually stop and think when they would see this comment, and they would actually ask questions like, how? How is it that Sony canceled Popeye for the Emoji movie? Do you have any proof of this? What happened during that time? So that's kind of the big thing that I want to do with you guys, is before the release of the Emoji movie, let us look down if it really is the case if Sony actually did cancel Popeye in order to make the Emoji movie. So, let us go and ask the question, did Sony intentionally cancel the computer animated feature of Popeye in order to make room to create the Emoji movie? Well, like I say in my reviews, let's find out. Now, for this, we would have to look into the history of this elusive Popeye movie. And as the animation historian that I am, and if I cannot call myself that, then someone who is highly interested in animation history, I have done enough of my research and recalling some of the past news that did actually happen related to this, and allow me to tell you this little story right now. Now, this idea of a computer animated feature of Popeye all began when Sony Pictures Animation announced that they want to go and do it on March 2010. Then, a little bit later, on November 2011, Sony announced that they would get the writers of the animated live-action hybrid of the Smurfs to go and write the screenplay for it, which is Jay Sherrick and David Ron. But then, what about the director? That was pretty much the big thing that people would attach this Popeye movie with. Well, that actually came on June 2012, when this is around the time when the first Hotel Transylvania was pretty much finished with production, or they would at the very least be very close to finishing production. So they decided they want to go and bring in Genndy Tartakovsky to be the director of the feature. And things seem to be going well with it. They actually stated that they want to go and put up a release date and that production is going well. They started out by putting out a release date for September 26, 2014. But as time would progress, Popeye's release date would not necessarily be stable, and it would be met with a lot of delays. It would start out by pushing it back to 2015, and then later they would go and push it back to 2016. And when it was pushed to 2016, that was around the time when Sony actually announced that Genndy Tartakovsky would instead go and direct Hotel Transylvania 2, while Popeye would just be a little something on the side. Because for Sony, the main thing for them, like the most important thing for Genndy to do, is actually go and direct Hotel Transylvania 2. That has to be made much more than that Popeye movie. Like, he can work on it, but just more as a little side project. Now, soon afterwards, things were starting to look a little bit better for Sony, when on September of 2014, Genndy Tartakovsky would be featured in an animation test, where Sony Pictures Animation decided to go and release the animation test for Popeye online. And what happened afterwards was that it actually went quite viral. People treat it as this major trailer that it was out, and it was actually quite well received. And the people that worked on it, like the creative team at Sony and Genndy Tartakovsky, were very pleased with how things were going. However, it turned out that not everybody was happy with that animation test. And the people that were not happy are probably some of the most important people that should be happy about that project. And I'm talking about the big heads at Sony Pictures. Now, if I may go in an interview with Cartoon Brew, when they would have a little chat with Genndy Tartakovsky, they would ask, "You mentioned Popeye, and I don't know if you want to be frank about it, but I really want to know why you're not doing that film." This is Genndy Tartakovsky's answer. "Basically, we did a screening, and it was great. Internally, everybody was super happy with it. I think it was also exactly what King Features wanted. We had a great reaction." But this was also during the culmination of the Sony hack, and I could feel that something was going to happen soon. So after the screening, I didn't get an answer from them, which was weird because everybody was so positive. Usually, we would meet and talk and get notes. But they had a meeting on their own, and that was it. I just got a phone call afterwards telling me how great it was, which always makes me suspicious. If they just call to tell you that it's great, there's something going on, because they didn't offer any notes. Later on, I personally went to see Amy Pascal and said, "Look, I'm a big boy, I can take it, I just need some information." And she said, "Look, Genndy, we love you, but we just don't like Popeye." Which would eventually lead on March 2015, when Genndy Tartakovsky would reveal in another interview that apparently, he's no longer working on Popeye. And that's when the internet freaked out and they pretty much proclaimed that Genndy Tartakovsky's Popeye was dead. And everybody pretty much pressed the panic button onto it because what they saw in that animation test might not actually happen. And they were freaking out. But what Sony Pictures was saying is that apparently, they did not fully give up on Popeye. All they did was just get rid of Genndy Tartakovsky in general. And the last bit of news that we have heard about this Popeye project was back on January 2016, when they decided to bring in one of the writers of the Ratchet & Clank movie, TJ Fixman, to go and write for the film. And that was basically all that we have heard about it. So what ended up happening was that it was somewhere at the end of 2014, around the same time when the Sony hack was going haywire, when Amy Pascal flat out told Genndy that that Popeye is not going well. They didn't like Popeye. So this is a little bit of a theory of mine. This might not have happened. So Genndy Tartakovsky might have actually been fired from the Popeye project during the Sony hack, when all that crazy stuff happened. And as for the case of what happened with Genndy Tartakovsky afterwards, was that soon after he was let go from Popeye, he would go and continue working, of course, on Hotel Transylvania 2, but he would also go and try to craft an original animated feature called Can You Imagine, which also got a lot of attention from Tartakovsky fans, seeing an original film coming from Genndy. But as you probably know, it was recently announced that the project was officially canceled. So basically, what ended up happening is that the only thing that Sony Pictures would tell Genndy Tartakovsky to do is just Hotel Transylvania or GTFO. Because when you do think about it, when it comes to the stuff that actually ended up being made by Genndy Tartakovsky or being complete, has literally been nothing but Hotel Transylvania projects. You got one, two, coming soon, there would be three. And speaking of the Emoji Movie, there would be that little pointless animated short called Puppy. So there's pretty much that. And that's pretty much it. They don't want anything else from Genndy. And as for the fate of the Popeye project right now, I would say that, if I could be very honest, with the direction that Sony Pictures wants to go, that they really want to go and reboot their brand, and by bringing in more new original ideas and more new animation people to potentially become directors, I would say that there is an 80% chance that this movie is officially canceled, that they're no longer making a Popeye movie. Now, of course, there could be that 20% chance that maybe in the future they will go and make a Popeye movie in the 2020 decade, but I'm pretty sure at this point there is no Popeye movie. And as for the animation test that people have seen, that one I can guarantee you, that is dead. You are never going to see that thing ever. You're never going to see that thing as an entire feature film. And there is no way in hell that Genndy Tartakovsky will be going back into working on that Popeye movie. It's just not going to happen. You just have to accept the fact that Genndy Tartakovsky's Popeye is dead. Maybe not Sony's Popeye. There's still that 20% chance that it could still be made. But Genndy Tartakovsky's Popeye, yes, that's dead. They canceled that. That is gone. Okay, so with all that said, you may have noticed that nowhere in that history, the Emoji Movie fit in. Where did that happen? Okay, so let us continue our story into where Sony Pictures Animation is, or rather, where Sony Picture is. Now, at that point, it was when the entire Sony hack pretty much finished. And as you may know, that was the time when many of the big heads at Sony Pictures had to go and step down. The president of Sony Pictures Animation had to step down. The CEO or the president of Sony Pictures Digital Entertainment had to step down. And of course, Amy Pascal had to step down. And so, a little bit later, a month later, or at least somewhere between January and February of 2015, this is when Christine Belson came in. She became the new president of Sony Pictures Animation, and she has the ultimate mission, like probably the biggest mission of her career that she is still doing right now, to go and reboot Sony Pictures Animation. Like, the people in the studio knew very well that they're having serious problems to at least even get up into the same competitive league with Disney, with DreamWorks, with Illumination, with Pixar, and all those big studios. And they're hoping that with Christine Belson, she can find a way to put Sony on top more than they have ever been before, and hopefully go on the right track to make successful animated features. So Christine Belson would have to go and try to find some new different ideas, something that is not from their initial small list of franchises that they have, something that's not Hotel Transylvania, and something that is not the Smurfs. So on July of 2015, she would go into an intense auction to go and fight for Sony's life in order to get this movie, because this was heavily demanded by Tom Rothman in order for this to be made. And ultimately, she finally got it, and now she has her first original animated feature that she would have under her name, which in this case is going to be a movie based on emojis. And the rest was pretty much history. And so, let us look into this entire history of all what happened. So, why is it that people would say that Sony canceled Popeye in order to do Emoji? Well, for me, I feel like in this case, it's more coincidence in the timing. Because you gotta keep in mind, like, the whole scenario of Popeye getting canceled or Genndy Tartakovsky getting kicked out of Popeye and making an emoji movie, it all happened really close. Because Genndy Tartakovsky announced it on March 2015 that he is no longer directing Popeye. And then just 4 months later, on July of 2015, that's when Sony bought the rights in order to go and make a movie based on emojis. So ultimately, with all that said, let us answer the big question. Did Sony cancel Popeye for the emoji movie? To that I say, no. Because the whole scenario with Popeye all happened with the old Sony Pictures Animation. It happened all before Christine Belson even came in. Like I said, the only time that we would know for sure that Genndy Tartakovsky was kicked out of Popeye was when Amy Pascal was still running Sony Pictures. So it could be during that time. So it's most likely around the end of 2014 when Genndy Tartakovsky was canceled. There is no way that Christine Belson was there to pretty much fire Genndy Tartakovsky from Popeye. It had to be during the time when Amy Pascal was running things, because it was most likely her decision to kick him out of Popeye. And as for Christine Belson and the whole emoji movie thing, that all happened afterwards. That happened right after the whole scenario with it happened after the whole mess with Popeye and all that kind of stuff. And even at the time, they were still kind of hopeful for this Popeye project, even without Genndy Tartakovsky, because a year later, that's when they decided to hire that writer. So that's pretty much all that had happened. It's just pure coincidence in the timing that somehow Popeye ended up getting most likely canceled, and then there's the emoji movie going on. There is no true evidence that we see that Sony Pictures intentionally scrapped everything from Genndy Tartakovsky's Popeye project in order to fill their schedule to make room in order to have an emoji movie be made. So that's kind of the thing that I feel very bothered whenever I would see that comment happening. It's just because it's not necessarily true. Like I said in the beginning of this, it's all made to fuel the hatred of the emoji movie, to pretty much justify why people should hate the emoji movie on the front of why it's made, like, you know, on how it's made by Sony Pictures Animation, because they would scrap a project that people would want and instead go and make a project that nobody would want. Now, with all that said, I just want to say right now that I don't want people to stop hating on the emoji movie in general because it's all freaking lies or anything. If you really do feel like the emoji movie is just pure absolute garbage, that it's going to be one of the worst animated films, that Sony Pictures Animation is absolutely disgraceful and should shut down because of making garbage like that and having such a poor reputation, honestly, I'm all for it. I'm not going to stop you, because it's not just an opinion. It might as well be a fact that the emoji movie is terrible. The fact that it sounds like it has a terrible story. The fact that it really does feel like a ripoff of Inside Out and the Wreck-It Ralph. The fact that the animation is mostly pure freaking garbage. That the characters feel absolutely bland, unoriginal, and sometimes downright freaking frightening that you don't want to meet them. Like, this is almost Norm of the North and Food Fight quality. Like, those are facts. Those are okay to say in order to go and attack on the emoji movie. But the thing saying that, oh, Sony canceled Popeye for the emoji movie, yeah, that's not a fact. And that is all that I've got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and a rate and review this episode? And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes.